Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Recapping the Nostalgia Queen era. Enjoy the episode. Really sad.
Yeah. It's the end.
It's the end.
I can, I guess. Well, see, this is about Winona Ryder's career trajectory right now.
Yeah.
Because we don't know where the road's going to go. Only time will tell.
I guess that makes this a fair piece to play.
See, that was exactly my thing. Anyway, I don't want to get into the da-de-da-de part of the song. As good
nobody,
as it is.
Nobody does.
As good as it is.
Right.
You know, underrated artist, Enya. Yeah. I feel like we don't give Enya enough respect anymore. Enya still goes. Right?
Enya did.
Orinoco Flow. Like, come on.
Orinoco Flow.
It's a good song.
Did Enya do a song for Lord of the Rings?
Yes, she did the Fellowship of the Ring song.
Yeah.
The one that, like. Wait, no, that's not her.
No.
Enya did the.
Enya did the.
Oh God, I'm now like deeply embarrassed. Yes, that's it. The may it be, may it be. May that's it. It's a. Yeah, this one. It's a good song.
So not the Smeagol song.
No, I do like the Smeagol. I do like that the Two Towers ends with someone singing from the perspective of Gollum. Like, it's kind of
Do
cool.
you like the fact that all you have to say is Smeagol song?
Yeah, so it's funny.
Know what you're talking about?
The Smeagol song. Like, da, 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 da. Yeah, how do you feel about you? We cannot talk about the Hunt for Gollum. No, we're segueing back to Winona. I was about to ask you.
Very important episode.
I was about to ask you about the Hunt for Gollum.
Well,
I've decided
what about?
We are not going to discuss the Hunt for Gollum.
Yep, too late. We're talking about
when we do our show, Kriego for Vigo. we'll cover the Hunt for Gollum.
Kriego for Vigo.
Yeah,
what
know.
Even is that?
I have no
the
idea.
The Hunt for Gollum. It's
the Morton
like,
Sons. That's what
I keep hearing. All this bullshit about like
it's going to be an entirely de-aged movie. It's going to star all these Lord of the Rings people.
That's what I was.
And
thinking.
They're going to look like wax figures.
I've been hearing all these articles and stories that all the OG cast are coming back.
Yes.
And I'm like, but wait a second, guys. Like
they're old.
You guys are older. There's Angelica.
Okay.
You're older, and it's like, why are you guys coming back? Who wants this movie?
You know who should be in The Hunt for Gollum? Winona Ryder. Anyway, so Winona Ryder.
Wow. That's...
get sucked into talking about the fucking Hunt for Gollum now.
No, that's good.
It's my fault that I brought it up. But
why no. male models?
Yes.
Okay.
Why male models?
Why male models?
But anyway, to quote, you know, the underrated artist Enya... who can say where the road goes? Only time.
Only
because
time.
We're at the end of Winona, of Easy Riders. Gosh. For now.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. We finished three seasons of this show now.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we left Brendan and John in a place where we basically knew where the trajectory was going.
Okay, I was about to say, if you're about to say we left them in an optimistic place, I'm like,
no.
Lest we forget John Travolta.
But no, I feel like when we ended with Travolta, what was the last?
We
like,
knew where his trajectory was going.
Yes, like the last movie we covered before we finished up was The Fanatic. It was very clear where his career was going,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was. It was
like we had
clear.
A pretty solid beat on his arc and how it ended at this point.
We've been correct so far.
Yes. The same with Brendan. Like, I feel like he had won an Oscar for The Whale, and we ended with Killers of the Flower Moon, and he had, like, a few optimistic-sounding projects lined up.
Yes.
And so I feel like we kind of ended knowing where he was going, if only for the next few years, at least.
If I just had the thought as you were talking, if our last episode of Brendan Fraser in the season while we were doing it was Brothers, I'd be a little bit more, where's he going?
Yeah.
Because of how long it's been...
Since
he's won his Oscar.
His next like three movies he has to line up all seem, even if they're not good, they're at least like kind of interesting. He's working with like people who are hot right now.
Yeah.
To quote Zoolander. So hot right now.
Wait, what?
So hot right now.
You're just quoting.
I was just quoting Zoolander.
So hot right now.
But why male models?
Yes. Anyway. Whereas Winona, she has nothing lined up right now besides the fifth season of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Which is coming up. But like movie wise, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Beetlejuice.
It had been like the touted project in her lineup for the last 2 decades.
Yes. And it can't, essentially.
And it's not a joke. Like, she literally, for the
past.
Has
been talking about Beetlejuice for 2 decades, 20 years.
20 years been talking about doing this movie.
I would say 30 years.
In the IMDb section of upcoming projects for Winona last 20 years, it's been this movie.
Yes. It said Beetlejuice 2 rumored. has been the tagline.
And now it's finally out.
Untitled Beetlejuice Project.
Untitled Beetlejuice Project. goes to Hawaii.
Yeah. Beetlejuice goes, must we go tropical?
Must
we go tropical?
fucking kills me
every time. And now that it's out. It finally came out.
That one thing that she's been wanting to do is out, and
now it's just like there's no her upcoming project is empty. We talked about this in a few of these episodes, but she has nothing in the pipeline besides next season of Stranger Things.
Right. Yeah. Keep talking. I'll just
pause it. It's exciting content for the listener home. Stuart opening his curtains.
It's just a little dark in here, and you had a little weird shadow on your face, and I just
Anyway. Yes.
Yeah, like what do you do?
Put that back in and double it.
What? What do you do? From a serious standpoint, like what do you do when like you've been the basket you're putting all your eggs in hatches?
Yes,
and you get Beetlejuice too, which like we had a long conversation.
Yeah,
some people like the movie.
Yeah, some people don't.
Some people don't.
It is an unambiguous success.
It's an unambiguous success.
But it's now just like, where does it lead her career?
Right.
And even removed from Beetlejuice, like, where's her career trajectory? Because Stranger Things is ending as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to have that anymore. Like, she's essentially got a wide open schedule going forward.
That's a scary thing for an actor.
Yeah. It's a scary thing for an actor, but it can also be like, Brendan, after he, you know, he won his Oscar for The Whale, had a wide open schedule. And he immediately filled that with quite a few projects that are coming up.
Well, we still haven't seen yet.
We still haven't seen, but like, Winona has, you know, Beetlejuice has come out, unambiguous success. Stranger Things is done. Like, what's the next move? What's the pivot? And we don't have a clear view of what that's going to be yet.
Right.
I feel like
there's nothing even rumored with her, which is like that's
I know about one project that she had signed on for and then left. Before filming.
Can we talk about it on mic?
I cannot say it on mic.
Okay.
I know this from someone who works on the movie.
Gotcha.
But she did sign up for something and then backed out of it. And it was like a big movie.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they wanted her for a big role.
Mm-hmm.
But she ended up not doing it for some reason or another.
Do you think, she's not that old.
No, she's like she's mid-50s.
Do you think she might be considering retiring?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
Because she's,
why do you say it like that?
Because she said she's 53 and she said that she wants to keep working. She said, I enjoy the process of being on set and I would like to do it forever.
Yeah, well,
mm-hmm.
But like, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, but it's also kind of hard when you're, you know, kind of being looked over.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like she's never going to quite get over the whole, like, you're an aging actress, .. thing. She's just never going to be able to get over that. And that's a hard thing for people to work through that barrier and to kind of reimagine your career or something different. I just don't think Winona's.
Yeah, I think that she's due for a reinvention.
Because
I think that the nostalgia Queen era, as we've talked about it, like kind of has run its course.
Absolutely.
Like Beetlejuice, big success. Stranger Things, you know, appealing to that 80s nostalgia. And I think it's time for Winona to reinvent herself as an actress. And I think some of the movies we've talked about in this era, especially like Gone in the Night and Destination Wedding, while less
bad movies,
they're not very, but they're at least her like kind of peeling out
something.
Of that.
She's trying something new.
Yeah, like Destination Wedding is like playing in the nostalgia of her and Keanu. But at the same time, like it is, it's like a real movie that she's in. Same with Gone in the Night, where it's like, you know, she's in a thriller. She's starring in a thriller. Like, these are the type of things that her career should pivot to.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't, the only, like, if I hear the only next thing she signs up for is Beetlejuice 3, then that will be, I'm sure she'll be in that movie regardless.
Yeah.
But, like, I would want her to be in other stuff. I want to hear Winona's going to be in a drama. Winona's going to be in an action movie, in a supporting role. Anything like that.
I would be disappointed if I heard that her next gig after Beetle 2's was going to be another sequel to something. Yes. Whether it's Beetle 3's or if it's...
Edward
Scissorfoot.
Edward Scissorhands, I don't know.
Edward Scissorhand 2 or...
They will never make Edward Scissorhands 2. There's absolutely nothing you can do with that movie.
Well, it's like, what do you do with the titular character as a beach body corpse of a whale?
He's like, what does he do? Johnny Depp, you put him in that thing again? I don't know. He's not going to do that.
He's not going to do that. But like everyone, like there's that Timothy Chalamet Winona Ryder commercial.
Yes. Son of Scissorhands.
Son of Scissorhands. Whatever they call it. Something like that. I don't know.
Like, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. And like, of course, she's not going to do like another Dracula Age of Innocence like movie.
You like want her to is the thing.
But
like,
I'm trying to think because like, I'm deeply curious if like Scorsese would hire her again for something.
I think he would. Well, but
why
he's
didn't he
also
hire her
like
again after Age of Innocence?
He tried to. Wait, no, he didn't. I'm thinking of The Godfather.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, Coppola tried to hire her again, and then she got sick.
After Dracula.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be in Godfather 3.
Right.
But no, Scorsese, like, there's a lot of actors he just doesn't work with again. Hmm. There are some, like, he will have his, like, usual troupe that he brings into all of his movies.
Yeah.
And then he'll just, like, kind of pick around. Like, he's always working with Leo, De Niro, Keitel, all those guys.
Yeah.
And so I always think, like, unless there's, like, an established precedent and then they stop working together, that's always interesting and something to poke into.
There's juice in that.
But if it's, like, they work with an actor once and then don't work, like, they just...
There's no juice.
Yeah. It's, like, Spielberg doesn't really work with the same leads a lot.
Yeah.
Aside from Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And Richard Dreyfuss. And Harrison Ford by proxy of being in 4 Indiana Jones movies. Four that he directed.
Which was the one he did?
Spielberg did the first 4 Indies, and then James Mangold did The Dial of Destiny.
Got it. Understood.
But yeah, he doesn't really work with the same leads a lot. Like he'll pull a lot of like character actors, like Mark Rylance is in Ready Player One.
This all inexplicably goes to say that I just like I.
You want someone
I
like
I want a good director to like give her a Killers of the Flower Moon role, Fraser.
You know what I would kind of like to see. Now that Tim Burton is like interested in, you know, going back to his roots type movies.
That's a scary phrase.
Which he's been very, you know, his the most recent project he's been attached to is a remake of Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Mm, okay.
And I'm not necessarily saying I want Winona to play the 50-Foot Woman, but like I would like to see like Tim Burton in kind of a more of a reinvention era.
Yeah.
Kind of take Winona along for that ride.
Yeah.
And they like have a new collaboration, a new style for them. Something else. Like that seems exciting to me.
I see I would like to see Winona get picked up by other bigger directors for like Fraser in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Style role. Which I'm always in support of. An actor doing that.
And like I think like he did very well in that role. Mm-hmm. He served a purpose very well. He had some meat he could chew on.
Yeah.
Like, I just want Winona to get, like, she doesn't need a big, beefy steak of a role in, like, a Tim Burton sequel.
Yeah.
I'd like her to get, like, you know, a nice little meaty role.
Yeah, some good little bits, like what she had in, like, Black Swan or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Where it's small, but, she, like, there's a lot to chew on there.
Right.
No fat on the bone.
Right.
It's a small filet, but it's good.
Well, maybe there's like something to be said that like back when Winona was doing a lot of those supporting roles, that was like she was in what she said, and as we said, her rebuild era.
Yeah.
And now it's like I can't help but wonder, it's like, does Winona think she needs to rebuild still? Or do you think she's back?
I think she's trying to figure that out in the same way we are.
Hmm. Do you think she's back?
That's the thing, is like I want her to be back.
Do you think right now, do you think she's back?
I think she is on the last step to being, like, if this is a literal staircase, she's on the second to last step to being back.
Hmm.
And the next move determines if she gets on the top step or if she falls down the stairs.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think we're kind of right at this precipice point.
Which is the worst place to end a podcast.
Yeah, it was the worst. No, I think it's at least a somewhat exciting place to end the podcast because we get to track this next era.
No, yeah, and like we've been very lucky on both our picks for the following
all
seasons.
Three of our picks. We were very lucky that we got to talk about Mobland.
Sure. But I just mean in the sense that, like, you know, when we picked Fraser and then boom, all this talk about the whale comes out, he won his Oscar, and we're like riding the coattails of that,
yeah.
Which has been kind of special timing on our part. Winona, we start covering her, and then finally Beetlejuice is gonna happen. You're like, oh,
and like there was that groundswell of love for her where she got like the New York Times interview, and she did the Criterion Closet.
Yep.
And like that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that will lead to where what's Winona working on now? What's happening next? Let's start making calls.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're now at the point where, like, we see if that bears fruit.
Regardless, I'm excited to what comes next.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing that we can differentiate between whichever actors we're going to cover and which ones we're excited for and which ones we're not. And I think Winona, regardless of how you feel about the last few movies that she's done, you can't help but be excited about what she's got coming up.
Yeah, coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, maybe.
I would like to see it.
I would like to see it.
And so I think, like, you know, because this is the retrospective of just, like, the last five movies, but it's also just looking back at the entire career.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Let me just, looking back at the entire career. Let's go.
All
right.
Yeah. you look back, because we started with Lucas.
Yeah.
Where she's just, like, 14.
She didn't even know how to, like, stand on camera.
Yeah, she literally didn't know how to be in front of a camera.
Yeah.
It's been a very exciting career for me, I feel like.
I feel like this has been probably the most interesting filmography we've covered so far.
Yeah, like, it's been consistently, like, kind of dynamic. Which is a problem we ran into with both... Apologies, I guess. Sneeze.
Okay, good. Yeah, like Fraser and Travolta both have like a doldrums period.
They had like big dry spells.
Big dry spells. And we don't mean that nothing came out. We mean that a lot came out. That just nothing happened.
And Winona had a dry spell.
But there was something in all of those
and, like,
dry spells.
And in her dry spell, there was like stuff. You know, well, there were like interesting things.
The biggest dry spell I can highlight right now, if you're on the same roster that I'm on, I'm highlighting between The Dilemma and The Experimenter.
Oh, Darwin Awards through Star Trek.
That's the thing is you have Scanner Darkly, The Ten, The Informers, The Last Word, Pivotally.
But it's a very short doldrums, right?
You know what? The 10 to Stay Cool is a pretty dire doldrums.
That is a pretty rough.
That's
period.
A pretty dire doldrum. But like even like The Dilemma to The Experimenter, like all these have some.
Yeah, there's something to all those.
Well, except for the fucking letter.
Yeah, the letter's awful.
Okay, but Darwin Awards to Stay Cool is pretty fucking dire.
But like,
well, I'd say, what am I saying? The Heart is Deceitful.
Yeah.
To Stay Cool.
But
is
I will
pretty
say,
fucking dire.
It is. A substantial improvement.
Yeah.
Off of the run of...
Oh, my God.
Journey to the End of the Night, The Last Time the Air I Breathe, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, Inkheart, Rise of Cobra, Extraordinary Measures, Furry Vengeance, Whole Lot of Soul, Escape from Planet Earth, The Case of You, Hairbrain, Punch Up, Chronicles, Breakout, Give Me Shelter, The Nut Job, The Poison Rose, Line of Descent,
or
The Secret of Karma.
How about Old Dogs from Paris with Love, Savages, Killing Season, The Forger, Life on the Line, Criminal Activities, In a Valley of Violence, I Am Wrath, Gotti, Speed, Kills, Training, Pate, The Poison Rose, The Fanatic, Paradise City, Die Hard, Mobland, Cash Out, That's a More. We got That's Amore coming out.
Supposedly. But no, like, she's a little more selective than the other two.
Yes.
It was a shorter filmography. She was only ultimately in 54 movies, I think.
Yes.
A little less, maybe like 52. She's only 52 movies.
Yeah.
And in all those periods, except for the one doldrums, there's always like some interesting film or director that she's working with.
Yes.
And so it's been kind of a joy for me to go through her career and get to talk about, like, finally watch some of these movies. Like, I love Bram Stoker's Dracula, but we also got to, you know, talk about The Age of Innocence, Little Women, How to Make an American Quilt, kind of under movie I underappreciated until Ange Gardner came on to talk about it.
Mermaids.
We shifted, like, we got to talk about some early 2000s comedy with Zoolander, Mr. Deeds. We picked back up with, you know, Darren Aronofsky, Black Swan. We talked about Star Trek, The Dilemma, Frankenweenie. Like, this is a very interesting career to go through. She's kind of found herself in a lot of...
These little pockets.
Well, these little pockets with interesting filmmakers and interesting moments in their careers.
Yeah, yeah. And even, like, some of the bad ones, like, they, like, not all of them, but there's, like, some of them that, like, you know, this was bad, but, like, it, like, The Iceman. Like, for as bad of a movie as that was, like, it had, like, some kind of...
Yeah, it was, like...
It had a little bit of
juice. It had a very good Michael Shannon performance.
Turks and Caicos. Like...
Turks and Caicos.
Like... That had a little... The House of the Spirits.
A deeply questionable film.
That's a very...
Remember when that girl used magic and then never did it again?
Yeah.
And you're just like...
What?
I just watched the 1996 Evita movie, which is another movie that has the problem with the House of the Spirits, where it's a bunch of white people playing Argentinians.
Nice.
Very good.
Very good.
Exactly what you want to see.
Night on Earth.
No,
you remember
that's a good movie.
I'm gonna shake your hand.
Shake your hand for that one.
That's a good one.
It's like a movie that, like, I feel like in the episode we're like, yeah, it's pretty solid. And now I'm like, that's good.
It's really good. I gotta watch that at 2 a.m.
Oh yeah, it's huge 2 a.m. movie.
Yeah, huge two in the morning movie.
But rather than just us going through and just like being like, that was a good movie, right? what you know?
Are we gonna do the
let's zoom in on just this era real quick. Destination Wedding through Beetlejuice.
Five movies.
Let's do favorite, least favorite, underappreciated.
It's more than half of what we're going to talk
about.
Half
of the movies.
Okay.
And then we'll zoom out.
So my favorite...
Look into your heart.
None of these...
Look into your heart, you know.
None of these are great, but I guess Beetlejuice is like my favorite.
Beetlejuice
is
the best.
It's the best. Say favorite is worse.
What about Destination Wedding, though?
It's the worst. I think it's worse than...
No, it's not.
I think it's worse than... I think it's worse than...
It's not worse than Sarah Cooper.
I think it's it might be worse than Sarah Cooper.
No, Sarah Cooper is trying to put you in a depressive spiral. It is not worse than that.
Yeah, to go back on medications and call my mom after watching Sarah Cooper, everything's fine.
But no,
oh, my God.
My favorite, Beetlejuice.
Of course.
Least favorite, Sarah Cooper, everything's fine. Underappreciated, Destination Wedding. Let's fucking go.
I think like Gone in the Night, like it's
like kind of hard because not really any of them are underappreciated, to be honest. I do think Destination
really
Wedding, right?
Underappreciated, but Destination Wedding just sucks.
Yeah. It's good.
I think it's overappreciated.
It's good. Pennsylvania might have gone red, but in my
Pennsylvania
heart,
went
my
red,
heart it stayed blue.
And it's decided. Okay. So that's the Nostalgia Queen era.
Yeah,
and we called it before we exited, we called it the Nostalgia Queen era because something that, you know, has been a big, we've mentioned it many, many times on the show. It's been a big overlay on the podcast, but of course we don't do TV. But I do think like we should sidebar to just talk about like
Stranger Things. We talked about it a little bit, but we can go more.
Yeah. Like just talking about like the build up to it, the impact it had, and then the lasting effects and where it's how it's grown, developed, and where it's going. So like, I guess, like, I'm trying to think back to season one of Stranger Things.
2016.
Fuck.
Right.
I was just starting college, I think.
Yeah.
Was just getting into my undergrad, which is fucking crazy. Wait, no. It was released 2016.
Yeah, 2016.
So I was in my, sophomore year of college.
It's like kind of the weird thing about Stranger Things is that it's like the tail end of the 80s nostalgia boom.
Yeah.
That really like kind of picks up, I'd say, probably like 2008 and really runs through the 2010s.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like now, like we're still seeing like vestiges of 80s. I feel like we moved very much into like 90s, early 2000s nostalgia.
It is weird. Like someone's going to do like a case study on like,
it runs in like 25-year cycles.
Yeah. When it's all people who were kids back then, they're in their 30s.
Yeah.
And I Obviously, you told me about this movie that I watched. It's about the time travel murder movie where they go back into 2003.
Yes. Did you watch it?
I watched it.
Oh my God. Time Cut?
Time Cut.
I can't believe I watched Time Cut.
I watched it and holy fuck.
Is it bad?
Yeah, but like it's not unwatchable.
I mean, most Netflix movies. They're bad, but like
they're not unwatchable. So, okay, but anyway, yes, you were talking about like we're getting closer towards the tail end of the 80s. Yeah. And so season one drops, and of course, you know, I'm from Indiana, so
watch out, guys.
It takes place in Hawkins, Indiana. And so I just remember like whether you were alive in the 80s or not, yeah, like you just had the nostalgia vibe from just the fact that there were the main players were kids.
Yeah.
And it was very much like an E.T. callback, like in that sense. Winona, though.
Yes.
Like, it's hard to really, but can you recall like if you had any reaction to like Winona? Like, because I recall there being like a small like ripple reaction to like
Winona being in that show was big.
Yeah.
I remember that. I did not really at the time have much of a connection to Winona. And so it's not like I'm watching like, whoa, Winona. So, but I feel like for a lot of people who hadn't seen her in something in a long time, Winona being in that added some legitimacy to the show.
Yeah.
That it needed to start.
Mm. Yeah.
And then her performance in it was great. Like the Christmas light scene.
Yeah.
She gets a lot of praise for that. I don't think she gets nominated.
No.
There's something we talked about, right?
Yeah. There's a few.
But I feel like
SAG
she gets
awards.
A lot of praise for it, and it kind of starts the rebound.
Yeah, because Winona's the nostalgia queen casting for season one, obviously because you know it's Winona, and what you say is kind of is very correct. Where it's like it gives a bit of like, what'd you say about like
legitimacy
gives like a good amount of legitimacy to the show. And her performance in season one was genuinely like, you know, really good. She has some moments to shine in season
yes.
one. She really does. You say like the Christmas light scene. I say the scene when her and the older son, Jonathan, are like walking out of like the morgue.
Yeah.
They're talking about like what they're going to do with the son. And she's like, not sure it's him.
Yeah.
And they have that argument in public and it's like, fuck, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's a good just performance that they do. To that point, to that degree, the later seasons come out.
Yeah, and her role gets smaller and smaller. I feel like I didn't watch season four, but it's my understanding she goes to Russia and like busts David Harbour out of the gulag or something.
Which is exactly what happens, Jeff.
And, just a little funny to me.
It's very funny. So. Yes, she does go to Russia and breaks him out. And it is kind of like the whole thing is little side questy.
Yeah.
Like we cut.
They can't figure out what to do with her character.
Because like season two, by proxy, it's like she's still kind of like a main supporting character
yeah.
because her son Will has a bunch involved in that season. And she's dating
she's dating Bob.
Sam.
Samwise Gamgee. Bob Newby.
Sean Astin.
Bob Newby, superhero who gets viciously mauled by a demon dog.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Lest we forget. Justice for Bob. And so she's in that season a fair amount. And then season three, it is just like, it's Winona and it's David Harbour. And that's where like... her role takes a different direction where it's like, now it's like Winona and David Harbour are going to be like paired up together for their like side quest missions.
Yeah.
And that's season three and that's season four. I can almost bet you it's going to be season five.
Yeah.
Like
they her main role in the first season is like mom of the boy who went missing. And
yeah.
she's like for, you know, leading the charge to try and
yes.
get him back.
Yes.
And then once he's back, she's a secondary character for the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens with a lot of shows, I feel like, where a character will lose relevance, but you don't want to get rid of the character. And so you just kind of keep them around the vestiges.
Yeah.
Kind of lurking. Which sucks for the performer.
It does. It's also like, I wonder how much is like, you know, Winona being like, well, her role is pretty much kind of not, I don't know. I probably not.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. So anyway, that's your little side corner on Stranger Things. You haven't seen the whole show.
I watched the first three seasons and then I watched the first episode of the fourth season. Was like, this is okay. And then I saw it was like 2 hours long. And I said, I simply do not have time for this.
Yeah. Yeah. They do get to be a bit long.
Like I have no problem watching a long TV show. I will do it. I have done it.
Uh-huh.
But if like it's not something I'm like super into, I'm not gonna do it.
Hmm.
Like I'm not someone who's gonna just casually binge watch an 18-hour miniseries. If I'm gonna watch an 18-hour miniseries, I have to want to watch it.
It's gotta be about World War II.
No, I don't know. Number one, Band of Brothers is 10 hours, and it is incredible. Number two, two 18-hour miniseries that I've watched are Ken Burns, the Vietnam War documentary, and then Twin Peaks, The Return.
Yeah.
Both of which are great, and I had a good time with them.
That's good.
But all that aside.
But!
Going back to our wider...
That's our Stranger Things corner.
Yeah, Stranger Things corner.
Yeah. And that leads to like
overall thoughts on our favorites, I think.
Oh, for the whole career. For the whole career. Oh boy, I should have practiced this. I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
Off the dome, I got it.
What's off the dome pick?
Off the dome.
Off the dome pick.
Best movie. Bram Stoker's Dracula. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Least favorite. It's The Letter. Like it's not hard.
Man, that's one thing I'll say is like because Fraser had a lot of mildewy kind of middle of the road movies. Yeah. Winona has like bangers and she has like flops.
Yeah.
Like she has movies that are so egregiously bad that it's like lest we talk about them ever again. Like The Letter. I never thought I could ever watch a movie so bad, so horribly made, so horribly directed.
But most underappreciated, something that I want to give like a spotlight to, is specifically her little run of late 90s work, like How to Make an American Quilt, The Crucible. Movies that I think kind of got, you know, in their time underappreciated. And I do think there's really something there to those movies. Like her big hits in the era are, you know, Age of Innocence, Dracula, Little Women, Reality Bites, all that stuff. But I feel like there's a nice little pocket there where she's doing some really good work.
Yeah.
In some interesting movies that were not appreciated in their time and may not be appreciated now. Like How to Make an American Quilt, like Andrew really turned both of us around on. You know, there's something here.
Yeah,
This movie's trying to say something and appeal to a demographic that just doesn't get movies right about them.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to like change the way you're kind of viewing that movie to sort of realize that.
Yeah.
Because when we both got turned on to it, it was like, oh my God, you're so right. And now everything we talked about in the movie was good.
Yes.
Like, oh,
all the things that we were coming into the episode to be like, I don't know why they did this. We were like, now I know why they did this.
Now I know why they did this. The other thing I do, I pointed out already, but I'll point it out again. People should watch Night on Earth at 2 in the morning.
Yes, you should watch Night on Earth at 2 in the morning.
Please watch Night on Earth at
fall asleep for a little bit of it and then wake up and watch the rest.
And then, yeah, I like Crucible, Girl Interrupted.
What's your favorite?
Is
it The Age of Innocence?
No. Because I'm not saying the best. I'm saying my favorite. Yeah. Or should I say, which of these do I think is the objective best?
What's your favorite?
What's my personal favorite?
What is your favorite? We don't got to talk about what the best one is. What's your favorite?
I really like Little Women.
Little Women's good, right?
Little Women's so good.
It's cozy.
It's such a cozy movie. Maybe I'm like a little bit like swayed because it's cold outside right now. We're recording this in December and like normally in Chicago, we get a little bit of like a heads up before it drops to like the 10s and 20s. We did not get that this season. Yeah, it immediately dropped.
But Stuart, I would say the only reason that I have any issue with Little Women is because I've seen the Greta Gerwig Little Women, which I think is like the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
And so it is like, I can't really be like, that's the best, because I'm like, there's a better version of it. There's literally a better version of this that I can watch at any time.
And that's so fair. Yeah. That is so fair.
That's not to discredit that movie. It's still good.
Bram Stoker's Dracula is like, that is like a masterpiece of a movie.
And I think it's like,
so much craft.
Of all the fucking Draculas that I've seen. Yeah. I've seen a lot of, Stuart, I assure you, I've seen a lot of fucking Draculas.
We've seen a lot of Draculas in our day.
There are more coming.
The Age of Innocence is her best performance.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Down.
Age of Innocence is her best performance.
Yeah, that's her best performance. I like Little Women.
It's good.
I really do. Like, and I think she's great in Girl Interrupted, but Little Women is like,
I should have gotten you a Little Women sweater.
Yeah.
That would have been a good gift.
Yeah.
Actually,
Christian Bale as Laurie.
I'm Laurie.
I'm in love with you.
I'm in love with you.
I'm in love with you.
Oh, that psychopathic man. Woman.
Least favorite. I mean,
look into your heart.
Of course it's the letter, but like, I don't want to be a cop out and just say that. So like, I'm also going to say the Darwin Awards.
This is valid.
And folks, this is below The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, which is an egregiously like a war crime.
Yeah,
that movie violates standards of the Geneva Convention.
It does. They did actually. The Hague has convened to discuss.
it's the Darwin Awards. The Darwin Awards is.
This is the Darwin Awards.
It's the Darwin Awards. It's really bad.
Movie fucking sucks.
I had such a good time talking about Winona.
Yes,
and I'm sad that.
I'm sad that it's over, but I'm excited to see where it goes next. And we'll chime back in every time she does a movie, as we have with Brendan and John.
Yeah. So, Jeff.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else to say, right? I think we basically summarized it. Like, we talked about Winona.
Yeah, we talked about her whole career.
Yeah. So, you're the listener at home.
Well, sorry. Lest we forget. Because it's the thesis of our show.
Yes.
What is Winona's deal?
What is Winona's deal?
We never really talked about that.
Yeah, we've said that for every single one of our hosts, and then like we end up taking a broader just view at the career. Mm-hmm. But I do think Winona's deal is that she is someone who is desperate to do interesting dramatic work. And is constantly being like fitted into other boxes. Mm. She grew up in an artistic household. Mm-hmm. Started out with some like, you know, aside from very young work, she was really into doing like your Draculas and your Age of Innocence, House of the Spirits, adaptations of great novels. Mm-hmm. And I think that she yearns to do that. But due to her success in movies like Beetlejuice, and Heathers and whatnot, ends up kind of getting form-fitted into other stuff, mm-hmm. aside from what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And I think she's happy to do it. She seems like she enjoys her work.
Yeah.
But I think that she's someone who's really committed to the drama of a piece, and that isn't always compatible with the movie she winds up in.
I think
like she'll really commit to the drama of like the dilemma.
Yeah.
And we talked about in that movie, it's like she's like evil in that movie.
Yeah.
Because I think she's really committed to the grander drama of the piece, mm-hmm. which is a Vince Vaughn comedy. Mm-hmm. It's not really a piece of drama.
Right.
And so I think that that's ultimately her deal.
I very similar wavelength with you. I would also say like, I think Winona's deal is that she treats acting. She treats that like, I mean, I'm going to say this and everyone's going to say like, well, isn't that every single actor, yeah. Stuart? I'm like, no, it's not. But like, I think she treats acting like a craft that she like works on every day. I think acting is her oxygen.
Yes.
I really do think that. I think acting seriously, I say seriously in the manner of like, it could be seriously for comedies or dramas or things like that, but just like giving a performance, I think that is her oxygen.
Yes.
Because what's the common thread we've said every single bad movie? She's not phoning it in.
Yeah.
She's never, we've seen
she's
Fraser's,
delivered bad performances, but she's not phoning it in them.
Yeah.
She's trying and it just isn't compatible with the movie.
And we've said like there's movies, Travolta's asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
Brendan's asleep at the wheel. Like we've seen all that. Winona's, I've never seen Winona asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, it's like she needs this craft, this art form.
She needs the craft and she needs the collaboration of it.
Yeah.
Like some of her bad performances that we talked about, I feel like when they're not filming, it feels like she's on a different wavelength than the filmmaker.
Yeah. And you gotta trust her instincts, because her instincts are pretty damn good.
Yeah, she has good instincts.
Yeah.
But I ultimately think like that's her deal, is just that she commits very much to the craft and sometimes seems less interested in the career of it all.
Yes.
Like Travolta was very like
career oriented.
He's career oriented. He's picking things. He wasn't very good about it, but he's picking things to like shape a career. And she feels like she's picking things because she wants to do that type of work.
Yeah, I agree.
Like in the 90s, you know, she does Alien Resurrection ostensibly because she needs to get into action movies. But what she's really doing, Alien Resurrection, because she wants to do an alien movie with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
And that seems like interesting work for her to just play an alien or a robot. Seems like fun. It is fun.
Playing a robot is like, at least now I think in movies, it's true. I rewatched Alien Romulus last night. Fuck. The guy who plays Andy. Holy shit.
I will forever, still mad that they messed up the naming convention, but it's fine.
Because he's an indie bot?
No, because it's Ash, Bishop, Call, David, ABCD.
Oh.
The other Michael Fassbender in Alien.
Is Walter.
It's Walter. It should be Edward.
And then
this one should be like, I don't know, Frank or something.
Huh. Interesting.
It really doesn't matter. It's not important. It's like such a minor issue.
Sure.
But I am just like.
But my whole point in going there was like, no, nowadays when you get a script, it's like you're going to play an android who questions their reality and their primary director. Yeah. Like, give me that fucking Oscar. It's
it seems like the main.
Winona was 20 years ahead of that time.
Yeah. The main things as an actor now that every actor wants to do is play a robot and seemingly also play the Joker. It seems like those are the two things everyone wants to do now.
Why?
Which they shouldn't do. But that all being said. I think we've said our piece with Winona.
We can close the book.
We can close the book for now.
We can close the book.
It's like the end of Return of the King. There are pages left for you, Sam, to write your story. There are pages left.
There are pages left.
And we shall reopen the book to see what has been written in them.
Yes.
But we can, for now.
Yeah.
And you, the listener at home, listening to this probably on December 18th, 2024, when this episode comes out, are probably wondering, what's the next episode? Is the show over? No, it is not over. Because like we did last two times. Well, you know, first, you'll notice next Wednesday is Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have a present under your tree on your new iPhone on the podcast app. Because next week we have our annual Christmas episode coming up. A very Trollton Christmas for... and what are we covering for, you might ask? We'll talk about it when we get there, but we'll be covering the Epcot candlelight processional with Brendan Fraser, which promises to be a barn burner of an episode because I could not find fucking anything else.
Oh my God.
So that's what we're talking about. Stuart, you are not ready for that episode.
I am
Epcot
candlelight procession.
The Epcot candlelight procession.
Does it have any of the actors we're covering?
No, Brendan Fraser is in it.
Okay.
He is in it. Okay. He is decidedly, he's the MC of the event.
Okay.
We will have Brendan to talk about.
Okay.
So yes, next week, tune in for our Christmas episode. Every year, it promises to be a good time. We might get visited by jolly old St. Nicholson again. Who knows? I sure don't. Could find out. We'll find out.
Fuck off.
Next week, Very Trollton Christmas 4, the Epcot Candlelight Processional. And then A week after that is January 1st, beginning of a new year. You probably wonder, what are we going to talk about? We're going to bring in a new subject of the show. Because, folks, 3 years ago, Stuart and I covered a movie that I don't think we gave due process to. I do not think we gave it its constitutional day in court. We came in a little sweaty and just immediately said, this movie sucks. And so we had to find a way to cover that movie again. And so, folks, Stuart, what is this movie and who are we covering again?
The movie is called Old Dogs.
Yes, we have to cover Old Dogs again. So I had to figure out a way to do that. And so Stuart went to the bottom of this. And Stuart, who are we covering?
Lights, camera, action!
Hi. Hello!
Good morning, Vietnam!
Long ding ding.
In the words of Porky Pig,
piss off.
That is right. We are covering
Robin Williams. Yes, our next subject will be Robin Williams. The season is called Bobbin for Robin. Why, you may ask, is we couldn't think of anything better. So it's called Bobbin for Robin.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
And some of you might be asking, how does he fit into, like, kind of the subject of our show? Because the three people we've all talked about are, you know, nostalgic stars, specifically of, like, the 80s and 90s, who kind of have a career bust and then a career boom. And, you know, Robin Williams, unfortunately, has, you know, left us a decade ago. But his career still fits into that trajectory. It's still, you know, ups and downs. It's an arc. And we really wanted to kind of delve into that and talk about, you know, the ups and downs of one of the most, like, expansive careers of the past 40 years or past half century, I'd even say.
Yeah, this was...
He's definitely the biggest actor we've talked about.
I'm trying to remember in dead seriousness, like... And so when we first spoke about, like, the potential of doing a Robin Williams season, I think I was very apprehensive about it at first.
It was your idea, but you were also apprehensive.
It was my idea, but then I kind of walked it back a little bit. I was like, actually, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, and my reasoning is because, like, you know, the thesis of our show is that, like, we take somebody, an actor, actress, who has and is still working in this industry, who's had a wildly interesting up and down career with curves and turns and all these sorts of things. And then the flip side of all that is it could change at a dime's notice.
Yeah.
And Robin's can't change. It is what it is. That being said, though,
I also feel like in the same way, like, you know, Brendan and Winona and all them have had, like, kind of recent booms in their careers. Even though Robin, you know, isn't alive anymore, I do feel like there's been kind of a cultural, you know, look back at him.
You know why? Because AI.
No, I'm not going to say just because of AI, but...
Well, no, I...
We will be covering AI artificial intelligence, though. That's a good-ass movie right there.
No, I, in all seriousness, like, I see exactly what you see.
Yeah.
But I... It is just kind of like a... The conversation for Robin has come back up because of all this talk about the legalities of using somebody's likeness for AI to make other content.
Another thing that I think has come up is there's been quite a few documentaries recently about other actors. There were like 2 to 3 instances of this happening. One of them being Superman, the Christopher Reeve documentary.
Yeah.
Where Robin is a huge part of the documentary.
Yeah.
And his friendship with Christopher Reeve and, like, him getting through Christopher Reeve's darkest time. And I feel like a lot of people are I don't want to say reappraising, but being reminded of the colossal talent and career that Robin had.
Yeah. Well,
and this feels like the right time for us to do it.
What I was going to go with on my thought, though, Jeff, is like you – there's the appeal of like what is happening right now
that could be
good for us to like decide to dive into this career. For Fraser, it was like, you know, there were rumors he could be starting a new feature. For Winona, mm-hmm. it was like maybe she's going to do Beetlejuice. And, you know, the thing is for Robin is it – for me, what changed my mind into doing Robin was not the appeal of what's something newer that could come down that could give us a whole new kind of catharsis to it. But it's the fact that out of all three performers we've talked about, and again, the main analysis of our show is the up and downs of people's careers.
Yes.
Robin Williams' film career is fucking crazy.
It is crazy.
It is buck wild nuts.
Yeah, he works with so many of the most colossal directors of the last generation.
All of them, practically.
Basically all of them.
He works with practically
His career is always, you know, going up and then busting and then coming back up. He's shifting between comedy and dramatic work, becoming like the premier like family movie star of the 90s. And then winning an Oscar at the end of it, and then shifting back into comedy. It's like it's an incredible run.
And Robin is the perfect example of like 2 seconds of fame
mm-hmm.
in the sense of like he wins. We'll talk about this, but like Robin's arc is going to be the most jarring arc we've talked about.
Yeah,
because he wins the Oscar, and his career goes down the toilet the morning after.
Yeah.
Like metaphorically the morning after, but like it really doesn't take long whatsoever. And so to that whole degree, combined with the fact that, as you just said, he worked with practically every single colossal yes. filmmaker of the age. Everyone's got stories about him. I'm reading a biography again, by
David Scoff.
I watched like the HBO Robin Williams Come Inside My Mind documentary. And like, I say this from like a place of like, there's nothing special about my admiration for Robin yeah. to that degree though, to get anecdotal with it. Like Robin was kind of like my movie dad.
Yeah.
As he was like to pretty much everybody in America.
Of that generation.
But like, I have vivid memories of watching his movies as a kid. From Aladdin, Mrs. Doubtfire, but even going further than that, like I watched RV with my family yeah. like 8 times. Yeah. I'm not joking.
Never seen RV.
Exactly. Not a lot of people have. But like Robin Williams was just like the kind of household name that like brought my family living room together.
Yeah.
And so I think it holds a special place in my heart personally, which is why I want to treat this season, you know, with as much care as we
yeah,
can
no,
to
we
get details
will.
Right. But I think we owe it to our audience that if we're all about talking about weird careers, you have to talk about Robin Williams.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Just like if
you real like
I say this, like if Robert Downey Jr. died today, mm-hmm. would that make covering his career any more or less important?
Yeah.
Right. No, it's like his career still crazy as yes. it is, and like with where he's at in his career right now, if he died right now, has something to say, but like yeah. it would mean no different than the last 30 years of his work.
Yes.
That has been crazy.
Yes.
Just crazy.
A crazy run.
So why does it make it any different here? I don't care that like, oh, there might be a new Robin documentary.
Yeah.
I don't care that there might be a new look take back. Like I'm here to tell the audience that if you're gonna join us, tune into us for season 4 of Bobbin for Robin. It's not because there's a new Robin Williams movie coming out in yeah. 2 years that's gonna win an Oscar, because that's not gonna happen, obviously. But I also don't want you to think that maybe there's a new documentary that's gonna reveal anything new. No, no, not even gonna be like that. Don't go into
what
this
we
season.
What we hope is that our season is the thing that like reignites your passion for Robin.
Yeah.
Or allows you to re-experience his career with us.
Re-experience Robin's career with us and join us on this.
As we kind of figure out what is his deal.
Crazy, degenerate story.
Yes.
About like probably Hollywood and comedy's most just wild.
I would say one of the most iconic figures of Hollywood of the last generation of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Someone who everyone has thoughts about.
Everyone.
Which I'm why I'm very excited to get into it.
Yeah.
And we will get into it.
And we will get into it.
Because like
not
we said.
Next week.
Not next week. Because we're talking about the candlelight processional next week.
Right.
Be ready.
Be ready.
The week after that, we will be starting Robin's career with, of course, his most iconic work, the 1976 anthology comedy film, Can I Do It? Till I Need Glasses. A movie that we will assuredly have so much to say about. A movie chock full of interesting trivia that we will definitely have things to say about.
Yeah.
But then right after that, we talk about Popeye, and, you know, everything's fine.
Yeah. Well.
But all that being said.
It's going to be great.
All that being said, thank you so much for joining us for Easy Riders, joining us on this journey with Winona. Please tune in next week and the week after that as we continue our journey of Travolting into Epcot and then... the career of Robin Williams. We hope you'll join us for it. We're very excited, and hopefully you are too. But in the meantime, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube. Thank you to everyone who listened to The Private Lives of Pippa Lee and made it our most viewed episode of 2024 somehow.
Wild.
I'm excited about that. I guess everyone was thrilled about Joe Biden dropping out. and then as a reminder, you can pop to our Reddit, r/Travolting. You can find us on Blue Sky and Instagram at Travolting Pod. And special thanks as always to Becca Johnson for the graphic design, Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music. Have a great week, folks. See you next time for the Candlelight Processional.